I would like to introduce our speaker for today. Jim Harding is a retired professor of justice studies at the University of Regina. He is a founding member of the Regina Group for a Non-Nuclear Society and was director of research for Prairie Justice Research at the University of Regina, where he headed up the Uranium Inquiries Project. Jim also acted as consultant to the NFB award-winning film Uranium. Jim Harding is a long-time peace and environmental activist in Canada. He has been involved with anti-nuclear research and activism in his home province for several decades. For two decades, Jim was a key member of the School of Human Justice at the University of Regina, where he acted as director in the early 1990s. More recently, Jim served for one term as Regina's inner-city councillor. He now lives, gardens, and writes on the Crow's Nest Ecology Preserve in the Capel Valley. Jim.
Who am I? I guess I'm already plugged in, so I have to watch what I say now.
Oh, I have to move that down, sorry.
That's all right. So thank you. And that's not really... It's funny, eh? How we get... Our identities get left in text. If I was going to introduce myself today, I'd say I'm a really happy Canadian for the first time in a long time, because I think we've pushed it and opened space for some revival of progressive politics. And I'm not embarrassed to say that I believe the cabinet that the Liberals put together is as or more progressive than the NDP could have put together with their people. And I think it's time we talked about the big picture and made the partisan stuff what it should be. Confused, distracting, but necessary. So Jan said the morning after Harper is defeated, she said, we're having tea in the lovely sun, and she said, it's so much lighter in here. She's the more retreatist side of the family. I deal with my angst and hope and stuff by going at it. We're the balance. She's the more, watch it, don't go out too far. It's dangerous out there. And she said, I had no idea I was carrying so much weight because I was trying to avoid the stuff and telling you, don't tell me that. And I said, yeah, you had just as much weight on you trying to make it go away as I had on me trying to push back. But then I'd also say, Tom. If I wanted to introduce myself this morning, I'd say, what an interesting drive into town, knowing that I was going to go and pick up Tom's parka at my mom's house and wear it. It's downstairs. Because I can see him in his parka when he finally had enough money to buy a catalog parka, the best, and it didn't hang on him very well. And I wore it in here today, and I thought, you know, it feels like it fits me now. So, you know, he gave it to me when he was hospitalized. I was supposed to take it to him to get him into an ambulance to get him to the next place because they decided there was another problem medically. And the nurse said, no, don't worry. We've got his other one, his old shaggy green one, if you ever saw him wearing it. And we're putting him in a heated ambulance. And I thought, what year is this? Oh, yeah, 2015. The nurse said, oh, you better bring a parka because we might have to put him in a taxi. And this is when he's having kidney failure for the first time. So I got the parka. He said, take it home, it's yours. So what can we say about this man who endured and stood up through what I think you will be surprised, actually, at what Tom was challenged to endure. I was thinking, you don't want to think about someone who's died in fragments. You want to think of them as your thing read today. Nice pick. Maybe coincidence, but... So help me see the part of me that lives inside of you. And I will help you see the part of you that lives in me. Pretty good summary of 50 years of friendship with Tom. And his paranoid schizophrenia and my delusions. We exchanged our delusions hundreds of times. And the difference was that it took me a while to realize I had to respect his, even though he couldn't act on them very much or very often or very effectively, except in extreme cases where he played major roles in building the mental health advocacy organizations here and nationally. So you see, his delusions were realized. And it took me years to realize we had to have an equal relationship. And so when I told him about my delusions, I'm going to run for mayor out in Fort Sand. I'm trying to save the sanatorium, and he'd look at me like I was crazy. He was right. I just resigned. We're going to lose it. The parochialism, the libertarianism, the Saskatchewan partyism, the deregulation, the who gives a crap about the heritage of the past of Saskatchewan, the Brad Wall, the future's good and the past is dark. You've heard that story again. Of course, it's always a lie because the past isn't dark. The past is something to build on always. So he saw through my delusion. I suffered. Sometimes I advised him not to do something, and sometimes he listened, sometimes he didn't. He ended up hospitalized, you know, quite a bit. And the RCMP was involved in one of them when I was involved with them. But you've got quite a few people who have an honorable tradition, like Nora Thorson, who I saw a picture of this morning. She's hospitalized in Montreal now, and her daughter and Jan Facebook. And she's detached, the picture that Heidi sent this morning. Nora's detached and has had a real struggle to get to Montreal to connect to her daughter and her family and her daughter's Mexican husband and to try to build a new family there. And we were saying to Nora, are you sure you want to leave this support system? And she was in her up stage and she said, yep. And she's been in the hospital, I guess, three times since she moved there. But she's had some real happy times being a grandma, watching Heidi pregnant again, and building this community with the Mexicans who are part of her extended family. So that's the side that she followed. And why would she listen to me anyway? We had a friendship of, you know, I'd say something and she'd push back and she'd say something and I'd push back. Well, okay, Tom's just a memory. But Tom was a student. He got 3 degrees. Physics, education, social work. Anybody else in the room here span those disciplines? Tom was really bright. Math, physics. He just cut through stuff with his abstract awareness on climate change. He did calculations, you know, sitting in the Robin's Donuts. He was reading Scientific American on the climate crisis. He'd give me copies. You got to write an article on this, Jim. I didn't have it. He made sure he picked it up at the Hotel Saskatchewan when it was available as part of his schizophrenic maintenance structured life. Talk about OCD. You know, we've all got it. We all got our, we keep doing things ritualistically to keep it, you know, in shape. I'm here again. So obviously that's part of my OCD. Tom was mentally, abstractly, very bright. Very bright. That was part of the problem. See, that intelligence gets disconnected from our legs. I'll come back to Tom's legs. There's some real funny stories here. You were at some of those meetings with Tom and Nora, the social therapy gatherings. I've got some stories about that. Tom was a serious student, okay? Tom tried to be a serious worker and contributor to society. He tried really hard. He ended up as a taxi driver, but he started out as an adult educator. He could not handle it. There were too many demands in the room. There were too many things to juggle. There were too many people with needs. It was disorienting. And he lost work. He tried that for over a decade. It was still part of his identity. I couldn't go out for coffee with Tom without again talking about the injustice of him losing his job in Manitoba when he had a contract for teaching adults. And, you know, in the history of Tom, this is the CPP files on Tom. They had it in there, so they must have thought it was important too. In so many words, the state file on Tom Bartron proved that his delusions were in fact real. You should see what's in here. His activism, his briefs to the Senate on mental health, they're all in here. Because they're proof he shouldn't be getting a disability pension. Because he's engaged. We beat them. But it took a lot. It took a lot to beat the buggers. But there it is. He was proud of this. When we finally got this mailed to us, Tom looked at this like, holy crap, man. Not only have I had a letter from Queen Elizabeth, but I've got a huge file in the federal government. And Jim, it's all in there. By ourselves. National Network on Mental Health. Senate briefs. Taxi driving. All the things that mattered and made his life real and meaningful. This was confirmation to Tom that his life wasn't wasted. Now, I used to say to him, I don't know why that letter from the Queen is so important to you, but I know it is. And then I'd say, are you a royalist, or do you have a little bit of the aristocratic in you, Tom? Do you have a little bit of Anglo-Saxon chauvinism in you, maybe? Your dad, RCMP, military, your mom, really well-educated, saved his ass teaching him literature, saved his ass psychologically, because he was extremely literate. I think Tom read as much as I read. I really do. I read a lot. I think Tom read as much as I did. But the thing is, he reread stuff. He reread stuff. He'd bring out his, this is what I told Premier Blakeney. And it was in his briefcase. I was going to bring an attaché case today and put all my stuff in, because every time I went out for coffee with Tom, he had his attaché case. He'd open it up and he'd show me something that confirmed that he was connected to the important world of power and change, and no one was going to take that away from him. And then I'd say, Tom, that's from 1982. And he'd look at me like, why are you even mentioning that? This is like 2009. And he still had it. Very organized in terms of special documents. He was a student. He was an immaculate student. Our society needs students who just say to us, it matters that I study physics. He studied the arms race. Do you know this about Tom? Tom knew more about how many nuclear missiles were still armed than the Prime Minister. He did. He'd remind me. He'd say, Jim, you should read this. And he'd have a journal article on the arms race, 2005. You know, there really hasn't been a decline in the threat, he'd say. And I'd be looking at him with tachycardia from his antipsychotic drugs, telling me the arms race is still a threat to humankind. So Tom tried to be a socially contributing worker. There's where the problems are. But Tom was also a patient. He was a big-time patient. Tom was like as high a status psychiatric patient as you can get, because he remained independent. He's the success case of our flawed system. Tom is the success case of our flawed system. And of course, it wouldn't have been possible without progressive psychiatrists, so I'm definitely going to acknowledge Dr. Elijah, who he luckily got as a psychiatrist in 2002, because Elijah worked with us. He was Nora's psychiatrist as well. Jamaican, Canadian, came back to work because there was such a wait list in psychiatry in Saskatchewan. I think he's just stopped working now in his 70s. Elijah believed in the social integration model of mental well-being. And the CPP ignored him. They ignored what Elijah said and picked earlier psychiatrists who weren't even Tom's psychiatrist during the period that they tried to claw back $63,000 from him. Do you hear what I said? They cherry-picked from the files from Tom's early psychiatrist before 2002, who loosely used words like he's in full remission. Now, you know what that means. That means his symptoms aren't manifesting. He's not acting like he's paranoid. He's socially functioning. He's not misreading cues. He's not engaging in inappropriate behavior. And he had done that from time to time. But his new psychiatrist from 2002 said, this guy is socially functioning because he has just the right mix of two small shifts of taxi driving which don't unhinge him. His connection to his community around mental health advocacy, and his general friendships. You know, I would be in that. But they didn't quote him. They quoted earlier psychiatrists using the magic drug Zybrexia had fixed Tom and he shouldn't have had any disability pension for 10 years. Zybrexia, the magic bullet that had fixed him, cured him of his paranoid schizophrenia, which is all a bunch of balarney. It's a better drug, a little less toxic than the early ones, which led to Tom's Parkinson's, diabetes. Come on. The antipsychotic drugs, I don't want to read them to you. I got the whole file. The poor guy's bladder and liver and kidney. The toxins that go through us to try to find a way to stabilize us or keep us connected to each other, this is dark age mental health. We're moving on, and we better move on soon, but we are moving on. There's signs. Elijah is a moving on. So in our appeal, I quoted Elijah, who wrote us a letter saying, this is what I've seen as his psychiatrist from 2002, and he had the courage to go against the old model, and it certainly played a role in us winning the appeal. So Tom was a serious student. He wanted to be a serious worker, had trouble with this. He was a really serious patient. He'd bring me the latest clinical handbook on schizophrenia after it was published, which he would order by mail, and give it to me and say, I think you should read this section on schizophrenia. He was a student about his own disease. And I'd read it and I'd say, Tom, I got something really different out of it than you did. I know you like the biomedical model. This is the kind of discussion we'd have at coffee. I know you like the biomedical model because that's the one they're telling you all the time and that's the one they're prescribing from. But there's findings in this very thing you asked me to read that show recovery reintegration rates among people diagnosed with schizophrenia up to 20%. This is high. With the kind of model Elijah was using. Balance. Which is all any of us are trying to do. Balance. Don't go too far that way. Don't go too far that way. Keep your commitment to drive your cabs. But don't think you're going to become a full-time taxi driver and earn $60,000 instead of seven. That's what he netted, $7,000 a year. And they were going to claw him back. $700 a month on top of a $600 pension. A $1,300 income, and they were going to claw him back. That's success. That's him being able to drive a cab, being respectful to the people he taxied around the city. Tom was a good taxi driver. Tom never got beat up. He had a knife pulled on him once. Tom knew how to reduce conflict when he had people high on drugs in his car. Tom was big enough that he even knew, he had enough male socialization that he even knew when he should stand up outside the car so people realized he was a big man and that they should cool it. Tom knew when to drive away when he didn't get his taxi fare paid, which happened to him quite often. Tom was a good taxi driver. He had social work skills. He had educational skills, and he was a physicist. Can you think of more qualifications for a taxi driver? He could calculate his mileage obsessively. And we used those in the appeals because the CPP had the wrong figures. They said, Tom, you're not sick anymore, so you don't qualify. And the letter said, you weren't sick anymore back in 2001 because you got Zybrexia and you could do cab driving and you were an activist. I'm not kidding you. This is the argument. You could be an activist, drive a cab, and you were on Zyprexia. So you weren't sick, so you didn't deserve the disability pension. We're going to take it away from you. Okay? And your income was too big anyway. You cheated. You nasty, nasty mental patient. You cheated on the state. You earn $17,000 a year gross, and that's way above our ceiling. I'm using their bureaucratic language. But Tom was telling him all along, I'm not a businessman. I rent a cab. I buy the insurance for the car. I pay for the gas. I pay an hourly rate. And my net income is $7,000 a year below the ceiling. Okay. Well, we won. But what if Tom hadn't been obsessive compulsive and kept his records? They'd have got the $63,000 out of him, which would have brought on his demise earlier. Tom's decline, let's just, you know, Tom as patient is actually quite inspirational. And again, your principles are right on. I just read through your principles. Every one of them's Tom. Every one of those principles is Tom. Read them through and think about Tom. I am not kidding you. Every one of those apply to Tom. Every one of them apply to Tom. So, he gets a phone call in 2006, has been on the disability pension for years, told he qualifies each year when he reapplies and sends in his income data, and they tell him, I hope you can see a picture of Harper behind me now, because I'm pretty sure it was a Harper directive to the deputy minister. We're doing a global reassessment of a whole bunch of people who are on disability. That's what they called it. We're doing a retroactive global reassessment of all kinds of people who we think have been ripping off the taxpayer. That didn't go in the letter, but you knew the sentiment was, there's people out there ripping out the taxpayer, and we gotcha! Tom Bartrand, you can drive a cab, two shifts, 6 hours a day, go to buy ourselves meetings, write briefs to the Senate, you're well. You're too well to deserve the disability pension. 2006, he gets the phone call. 2007, they do the global review. Think of Tom's time and stress here. Just think about it. 2009, they tell him they're clawing back $63,000. He's got 90 days for an in-house review. He loses that. 2010, we sit down. We make a pact. I said, I'm with you. But we got to do this together because we've got no information at all. And you're the most disorganized guy I know. If you ever saw his living room, his filing carpet. And over 4 months, Tom and I reconstructed accurately from his memory, finding documents, me doing filing cards. I'm serious. It's all here. You can look at it. We reconstructed the whole damn thing, the psychiatric history, what the psychiatrist said, his income, CPP policies. They breached their own policies. There was a federal court judgment. He said, oh, Jim, I got to get you a federal court judgment. I said, get it for me. He got it, and right in it is said, they are applying their policies as if they're not in the real world, quote, which, of course, is what they were doing to Tom. They'd taken him out of the real world, and they were going to get that $63,000 out of him. So over 4 months, we got it together, gave our initial notice to the office of the commissionaire, which is out of that department. You get a little bit of distance. You get a little more of a fair hearing because the internal reviews, no. Not much of a chance of fair play. And because of Tom's obsessiveness, his ability to find stuff in his house, his knowledge about the field, including the research on schizophrenia and on disability policy. Tom was an advocate. Tom, I don't know how many people Tom helped with the CPP disability policy stuff, but he knew that stuff. And he'd tell me, no, go get this. So he was really the resource, and I was the secretariat, pulling it together, making it into a credible appeal. Tom also was a man who wanted to be in a family. And that never quite worked out in stereotypic terms, but he told me once, you know, Jim, I feel like your kids are my kids. Because when I phone to say, are you in town for a coffee, they know it's me before I tell them. That's Dagan and Joel. Because they grew up with Tom. Knock, knock, knock at the back door. Dad, it's Tom. Weekly, he'd walk from Cathedral over to the core, bang on the back door, part of his ritual of keeping connected, having a socially engaged life. He walked miles, this man. He walked in the downtown. He was known. He was known as the walker. And I'd sometimes drive by him because I had something else to do, and I'd watch him walking. And he was so committed to keep moving, keep connected. And he covered, I don't know, in a day, he'd get up in the morning, he'd walk to the casino for breakfast when he could. This is before this all happened. Then he might go in the lunch to the Serbian club. And sometimes he'd take the bus, sometimes he wouldn't. He was all over the place doing. He didn't cook too well. I'm not including that in my list. Tom was definitely not a chef. You know, we worked on that. We tried to get his kitchen set up, and it just was not going to work. Tom could get home care medically to check that the anti-clotting drugs were working, but he couldn't get home care to help him keep his bathroom and his kitchen clean. There's something wrong with the policies. Because that's what he needed to be monitored when he was on the anticoagulants. Because he was sometimes too thin. His blood was too thin. And sometimes it wasn't. But he needed food. He needed a clean bathroom. The plumber came in once, and he wouldn't do the work in the bathroom. We wouldn't do it. It wasn't nice. It was not. Didn't smell good. So there's the other side of it, or the full picture. We used the charter in our appeal. I think it scared them. We didn't have any money to take a lawyer to do a charter challenge, but there should be one. If they quote him as an activist, as a justification for clawing back money, then there's really something wrong, because that's a department of the federal government that's to work under the Constitution and the Charter. And we know how the wedge master Harper could make that less and less real in the country. And you know what? Tom was a victim. And Tom was a champion in defeating Harper. Think about that. I never thought about that before. He was a victim, and he was a champion in defeating Harper. Because these things all matter. They all add up. This matters. Tom's made history. He'll be in the Paul. I mean, I'm like making sure this stuff goes into archives, but this is a case study in a well-educated, paranoid schizophrenic who believes in justice, mostly for others, by the way. He had more trouble advocating for himself, but we all need someone to do that for us. He should be right in there as a case study, because he helped form one of the most effective mental health self-help groups this province has ever seen, okay? By ourselves. From 1981 up until fairly recent, and I'm sorry Bob Hughes didn't come, because Bob's part of this history and an amazing man in terms of his own work. It was Tom and a couple of others who sat down and said, we need to organize and put pressure on the mental health system and Sask Health to provide us resources and a voice in the system, because we aren't objects of care. We're subjects of care. And he had that figured out early on. Okay, 1981. Then when the national mental health system was getting fragmented by Harper's government, okay, because you know they were doing that, they were wedging policies all across this country as a way to control them. I mean, today's a good day because we're going to move towards at least some national policies on climate change and probably environmental re-regulation on the waterways. But those things were being fragmented at the same time as CPP, disability, offloading to the provinces. They wanted him on provincial welfare. That's what they wanted. $600 disability, take away his pension because he's now well, because he can drive cab twice a week for 6 hours, and manage his stress. And let me tell you, he had a lot of stress driving cab. I know, because I saw him pretty much not unhinged in the sense of paranoid symptoms, but really, really agitated because of something that happened on that weekend. It took him from Monday to Saturday to regain some equilibrium and energy and get his other structure of his life back in so he could start again on the next shift. And he was becoming quite good at balancing this. The amazing thing about Tom, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, he's under the gun from the CPP. Could you do that? What would your sleeps be like? I know I didn't have very good ones doing this work with Tom. And no psychiatric symptoms manifest. And that's because of Elijah. It's because of me. It's mostly because of Tom. Because he already was living in such a way that his life wasn't going to come apart. He was doing all the right things for his circumstance. All the literature on social psychiatry says this is what we want. We want people who have an active personality, who are engaged with the troubles that they are at risk of. So, Tom made history. He got a letter from the Queen. He had big delusions. And I'm here to say, I think Tom's delusions came true. And that's the best way, perhaps, to honor someone like Tom. Okay. And I'm going to put this downstairs so you could lift it and realize just how significant his psychiatric advocacy was. I'll put our appeal down if anybody wants to look at it. It's an interesting document. I just reread it. And then I want to give the Unitarians copy of this, because Tom was inspirational in a social therapy group that some of us sat in for 18 months. I think it played a role too in how Tom dealt with the stress. It's based on a performing model. If any of you want to go to New York, all-star theaters, anti-violence arts work, they're doing amazing things. It's based on the model that our lives are all a performance. And I think Tom knew that. I think a schizophrenia kind of, it's a word we put on something that possibly we could call other names. He wanted to make a difference. He wanted to understand. He wanted to be taken seriously and to be heard, and he was. And in these social therapy groups, there was only like 6 or 7 or 8 of us. We were a rotating group. We all got a chance to perform ourselves. And the one I remember, and I'll end here, is Tom. Nora had just said, well, look, the bipolar and the schizophrenics are both necessary for the advocacy work. When we're manic, she said, we can really get an organization going. This is Nora, because Nora was the head of the mental health advocacy group in BC, Nora Thorson. She headed it. She was the staff person. She was that functional that she did that for 2 years. She says, when we're up, boy, look out for us. The trouble is, we have to rely on people like Tom, the schizophrenics, to keep the organizations going. Okay? There's some truth to this. Tom's plodding. Okay? Carrying the same file from 25 years ago. Remembering the history. Keeping the details of policy. Being able to say, oh no, that's not CPP policy, to one of his colleagues and by ourselves. And then Nora said, well, look, Tom, you're always sitting there. And he's sometimes smiling like a Cheshire cat. He was. That smile on his face, like it's a smile that comes from a deep, deep place back to your song. I loved it. It's a nonverbal smile. It's like I'm being heard. You're getting past the clutter. I'm being heard. So Nora says, I think you should stand up. Tom, I think you should stand up. You're always sitting. You're always talking. And Nora was a drama student. Okay? I think you should stand up. So Tom stood up. So we all stood up. And then I said, well, what we were doing is we were trying to perform how we felt about our limbs. We were trying to express to each other how connected we were to our hands and to our feet. And Nora says, yeah, Tom, what about your feet? And Tom was doing this like he couldn't get a feeling to his feet. Now, tachycardia and the antipsychotic drugs didn't help, but there's probably other stuff going on. But then he did this, and he said, but I can feel my hands. And he was in ecstasy that he expressed that he had that internal body connection. Because you know, with paranoid schizophrenia, in quotes, a lot of the problem is this thing isn't connected to these things. And then Nora said, good, I know you're here with us. And he sat down. And that's my actual last memory of Tom in that group. So I'll leave that with you. But I want to present you this because this came out of that social therapy group, and I'll leave a copy in Tom's honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim, for that inspiring and very heartfelt presentation.